Miss Nesbitt, reel 2.
Did
that Engines
ever,
for the aeroplanes.
Did the blackout during the First World War ever affect you as an actress? I mean, you'd be mostly working at night,
yes.
I should think.
There wasn't a blackout at all to the extent that here you were... the stint in the last word, but
no,
I don't. There was nothing like the black. It was just if you were walking along in the dark and making suspicious signs, I suppose. But I don't remember. No, it didn't at all, because I remember I was touring during the First World War, and oddly enough, during the Second World War, it was just the theatres, the lights were going, because I did a long tour. Then, and there didn't seem to be any trouble. It was just the private houses. Everything was dark. You know, you couldn't show them. But in the theatre, I suppose, there were no lights in the vestibule, of course, or outside the theatre, or names in lights or anything like that. But the inside the theatre was... As even when the theatre stopped in London, which they did for a time, a lot of tours went on.
You actually left London and went to New York during the First World War, but while you were still in London, there were Zeppelin raids and airplane raids.
Yes.
Did you ever, were you ever in any of those?
No, I was never hurt at all. I remember thinking how wonderful it was. I went on a tour with Roland Culver. From London, and I thought how lovely not to have these awful raids, to be away from the bombs. And the first night in Liverpool, there was a terrific, terrific bombing, and another time in Huddersfield too, so one didn't really escape it going away.
Did you ever actually see a Zeppelin during the First World War?
I never saw one. And one wasn't really much aware of bombs during the First, because I know we lived in South Kensington then, and I remember enormous excitement saying that a Zeppelin had dropped a bomb in Hampstead somewhere, but nobody seemed that I knew had seen it, and it was of such a very rare event. It wasn't a regular attack as it was in the next.
If a Zeppelin came over London or wherever you were performing in theatre, would the performance carry on? Or would the people be sent home?
Do you mean during the Second World War?
No, during the First World War.
I imagine so. I don't think I was actually playing in London at all during the First World War, and so when one went on the road, there was no... I don't think of many of the provincial towns. I wasn't even aware that there was a war. But, of course, during the Second World War, people would go to the theatre, and I was playing a play called Outward Bound, which had all, it was about a ship, and all the people on board were supposed to be dead, and strange sounds came from time to time, wails. And sometimes, when we made the wailing sound, which was a thing that was awfully like the air raid warning, you'd see the whole audience going down like that, hiding their heads. It was the instinct. It was like wind blowing of corn. Such a funny sight, somebody said. They thought, and then they woke up and realized that noise came from the stage.
You were actually earning a rather enormous amount of money at the time of the First World War, I think. It appears from your autobiography you were probably getting about £10 a week.
No, I think £5 a week was the most I ever got before the world.
Even that is very high. That must have been very pleasing to you to have so much.
Oh, it was, because I started getting 30 shillings a week, you see, and it went up to 2. And then I went to America on this tour with the Irish Players, and it went up to $25, I think, which was then £5 a week. And I remember when Granville Barker engaged me to play in Winter's Tale, and he said, "Now, what salary do you want?" And I said, £5 a week. He said, "Okay." And then I suddenly thought I should get more, and I said, "You know, I wonder if that's enough, because when we were in America, several of us found that the carpenters and the electricians were getting much more than we were, and Barker said, and so they should. They were trained at their job. You're only beginning at yours.
You think you could have got more if you had told him some other figure to be
I think with? Probably, because I think at that time... Well, no, I didn't, because, you see, when I was engaged, it was just to play a supporting part from the Two Shepherdesses, and it was by chance I came to play Perdita. And then I think Perdita probably would have... Then I was engaged to him, contracted to him, so he let me out to other, and I was really playing very leading parts for very little money for several years.
Did you need to send some of your money back home to your parents?
Well, I had to help my parents a bit then, because my father had bad reverses, and I paid for my youngest brother's education, various things like that. I still see, as I look back, nearly all my life I've had someone dependent on me.
What did your brothers and your sister do during the First World War?
Two of my brothers were killed during the war.
In the army?
And they were all in the army. Even the youngest one, whose school fees I was paying, I was only 16. He ran away from him. He was very tall and looked like a man. And he was so... People didn't know what war was like in those days, and they were all thought of the Great Crusade and the Great Adventure. They were all rushing to enlist. And he enlisted. And he and my second brother were killed within a couple of years of each other. And my eldest brother was in the Air Force and had a bad crash and didn't realize that it had affected his heart, because he died of a heart attack a year afterwards. And then my little sister wanted to be a ballet dancer. She was training, but she had leukemia, which they didn't know how to diagnose then. They thought it was tuberculosis of the stomach or one thing or another, but she died of that soon afterwards. So
that was all your brothers and sisters?
All my brothers and sisters, yes. The whole family was... And then my father and mother sort of settled in Redcliffe Square.
Your mother, you said, lived till 1939. What about your father?
He died a year after. She died in 1939, I think, and he died a year after.
Your eldest brother, I think you said in your autobiography, became an actor.
Yes, he did. And quite a lot of people, by now in New York, remember him. I remember Helen Hayes saying she'd seen him in plays and admired him very much. He turned out to be a very good actor. It was funny because no one in our family had ever dreamed of it.
Did he use the same name, Nesbitt?
Nesbitt, yes.
When was it that your brothers were killed in the war? In comparison, say, to when Rupert Brooke died?
I'm trying to remember now. I was playing in New York in 1916, I think, or 17. It's too awful. I can't remember dates at all unless I look up in Who's Who in the Theatre what play I was playing in. I was playing with John Barrymore in a play, Galsworthy play. I think it must have been about 1917.
Both brothers were killed then?
Yes.
So they died one or two years after Rupert Brooke?
And then the third brother died after the war. I know he's back in England. He died in 1920 of a heart attack, but they said his heart had been damaged by this fall he'd had from the plane.
With the loss of your brothers and of Rupert Brooke and of many other people that you knew, what did you think of the war? That all these people who were so close to you could be killed?
Oh, well, it was a horrible feeling. I remember before I went to America, It seemed to me that every young man I knew was, I mean, the casualty lists were appalling. I mean, this last war, I was surprised to find how few, I mean, my own son and sons of so many of my friends, compared with, playing with their thoughts, my bad, compared with the First World War, where every day one looked in the paper and there was someone one knew. And it was a sort of feeling, not so much sort of a daily depression, but a kind of a feeling of what on earth is the future going to be like? Everybody's going to be dead. One felt all one's contemporaries seemed to be the first year of the war. The casualty list was so fantastic. It seemed all so useless and pointless. Because even then, beings, I say, like my father, a non-believer in most things, I never could believe that any good people said, oh, it's wonderful for the morale of the people and this, that, and the other, and people will be kinder to each other. But when a war stops, everything goes back to the same norm. And one thought the League of Nations was going to be a marvellous preventative of war again. And then one rather... Some people quite hopefully thought the United Nations would stop wars. One hopes now sometimes that the absolute horror of what have been discovered in the way of the atomic bombs and the nuclear weapons would stop a major war. But I don't think, I mean, anything might trigger off one at any time, I feel.
It seems there are various reactions one could have to a situation like the First World War. It could make you very bitter that everyone you cared for was killed. It could make you constantly depressed. It could make you a super patriot in some ways, and you could say, oh, if he's going to kill my friends, I'm going to kill him.
I don't think I ever felt that in a funny way. I don't think I ever felt... Any bitterness towards the Germans. I just had rather a hopeless feeling that it's inherent in human nature, as far back in history as you go. People have been fighting and killing each other, and it's never solved anything, but it still goes on. And I thought it's just one of those things. If you're a human being, you fight as any other animal does.
Was there any possibility of an anti-war movement, people petitioning the government saying, look, this is useless, everyone's being killed, can we stop this war?
I don't think so. There were the pacifists, of course. There were the whole Bloomsbury group, Fullerton, Strachey, and so many of them who really were idealists. I think you had to be an idealist, because I think it took much more courage to be a pacifist than it did to be a soldier, particularly in those days the pacifists were so scorned. And I think that so many people were pacifists, but it took great courage to be a pacifist.
Did you know any of the conscientious objectors personally?
I didn't. I only knew Strachey very slightly. And I don't think I knew, happened to know. I read about them, of course, knew their names, a good many of those who had. But I never actually knew one, because all the young men I knew were all eager to go on this great... And, of course, there was a feeling... of fury. I remember feeling very distinctly a feeling of fury at the German invasion of Belgium. I felt that it was overrunning a poor little country, and I thought we should have declared war over Czechoslovakia. I felt very bitterly about that, but poor Czechoslovakia seems to be born to be overrun by either Russians or Germans. Like the Poles, some countries seem to be like some people seem to be born to...
Did you ever consider doing any war work yourself, either with women's services or in munitions, during the First World War?
During the First World War, No, I didn't. Not any actual, not in uniform or musicians or anything like that. Because, what seemed to me to be wanted at the moment, I had no experience of what I call hand skills. I wouldn't have been much use in a munition factory, I think, or anything like that. Whereas what work I did with teaching the East End wives to cook and to dance, they had a dancing class which they adored and cheered them up a lot. And the censorship, which I suppose they had to have, I thought was rather ridiculously done, so many bureaucratic things when they're set up too quickly.